basically look at global aging. So there will be some elements that are common across the globe, but I will have a little bit of a focus in particularly low and middle income countries, because they have their own kind of similarities and differences when it comes to aging. So just a background and overview. So I would like to speak a little bit about the notion of aging, but mainly from a demographic perspective, which is the population aging, but also at the individual level, and maybe differentiate some of the experiences through migration, mobility, and global connectedness, and the notion of aging in and out of place, particularly in that conference when we you know, squarely focusing on space and place in the experience of aging. And just also touching base on the life journeys that we are actually, it's a journey to aging is a journey. And there are diverse experiences through this journey, and then kind of cumulative towards end, and manifest itself in various equalities and inequalities. And within this kind of talk, I would just briefly mention the kind of old kind of newcomers, and I'm talking here about perhaps countries and communities within countries, and maybe there are a lot of similarities rather than differences when we think about it, and this kind of idea of global north and global south, I would like to promote the two-directional cross-learning rather than we've done it before, we have experience and we know how it is done, because it's a learning process. And to have a little bit of focus on the Middle East and North Africa region, and also within the light of the healthy aging agenda, and particularly, as many of you know, the United Nations has recently, just before Christmas, endorsed the UN Decade of Healthy Aging 2021 to 2030. And that's a good catalyst to think about opportunities. And I'm not focusing on COVID, but this is a reality that we live in, but I will perhaps reflect on some of the work particularly in the Middle East, around the impact of COVID in the realities of older people's lives. So just a quick kind of quick background of where I'm coming from a demographic point of view. So a lot of you would know these ideas of transition, demographic transition models at the whole world. And the population growth is really determined by few factors of how we behave and how things are as a group, as a population. And basically there are three main kind of dynamics that are going on, which is fertility or total fertility rate as a group of people, the kind of average number of children we have, mortality, and within that is the life expectancy. So when people die, you know, as a population again, and the number and proportion at different age groups. And also the more dynamic nature was there is less attention to it, and the shaping of demographics is migration and mobility. And if we look at this, you know, kind of quick sketch, is that we started with the kind of very high both. So the blue line is kind of a birth rate or fertility. The red one is mortality, and the black one is the population. So all kind of societies started with high fertility rate, high mortality rates, and to some extent that kept the population stable. And then we know that, you know, progress in mortality has, you know, preceded reduction in fertility. So we actually knew how to, you know, control and decline, particularly child and infant mortality, and improve the lives and health. And through this process, fertility remained high. And then, you know, that led to growth in population. But then towards the end, you know, in the majority of countries, you've got kind of both low fertility rates and low mortality rates, and you end up with a bit of higher population, but it's again stable. And countries actually across the world are sitting in different places, and in you know, the Western world, the majority are in kind of stage four, but the many of the low and middle income countries are in the kind of the stage three, but in full swing of that stage. And the speed and tempo, which is something I will talk about later on, is quite different from the historical perspective. So we are talking about global aging that is happening through a very long timeline in relation to historical and recent changes. So we talked about population aging as, you know, we talked about this fertility and mortality, but what is population aging? And I think there are various measures to look at this demographically. And there are some what I call static measures, like you look at certain percentage and you say, okay, over 60 or over 65, what's the percentage of the population? Things like the age index, which still kind of work with the traditional model of life cycle, that you've got a certain age group where you think this is where they can be economically active and thus independent economically. And I think we are moving a little bit away from the kind of economic to well-being, but it has been so far that we think about dependency and think about younger people and older people as dependent, and we think about the age dependency ratio. And these are very static and really doesn't pick up on some of the developments that is happening and the increase in life expectancy. But there are more recent development, particularly taken forward by, again, the United Nations, which what we call prospective aging, which puts aging as an rather than as a static number, but dynamic in relation to remaining life expectancy. So if you are a healthy person in your 50s or 60s, and you still have, on average, quite a good number of years remaining in your life, and you're still active, and in comparison to the whole population, you can do certain things, then you're actually, your age, you're not age until you reach a certain number. So literally we're talking about 50 is the new 30, or is it 75, the new 60? So it's really dynamic, and it's different from country to country and from groups of people to groups of people. So you might find that morbidity in certain countries at age 50 equate to morbidity on average for someone else or the group of people somewhere else at age, say, 75 or 80. But what we're talking about, when we talk about population aging, we're really looking at the whole structure of the population and the shape of the population at the societal and population level, where it entails that a large group of the population have become older, and that is regardless of which measure you are using. And thus you're having a shrinkage of the middle age group and the younger people. So traditionally we've been, you know, talking about population pyramids, but really in many countries, this is more of a kite rather than a pyramid, particularly in countries like Japan and Italy. But what is also important when we go down the population level is the individual's perception and perceptions of aging. And I think this internalization of aging is very much space and culture sensitive in terms of what one can and cannot do. And not only the perception of others and oneself, but the ideas that one grows up with and what they think of aging and how that is changed, and expectations, but as well as the opportunities that surrounding him or her. And these are very different, and there are huge differentials by societal, but also within society, communities and individual factors. And these, but again, I want to iterate that the variation in health and well-being at older age is not really random. It is accumulation of a whole life experience and over the life course, rather than it just happens to that person and this person. So just to give you the idea, I did mention at the beginning this idea of speed. So really, some industrial countries which have seen these changes in population aging have seen it over a very long period of time. And still in demography, we think about if 10% of the population is older, then it's an aging society. And if 20% of the population has become reached that age milestone, then it becomes an aged population. And if we look at France, for example, it took nearly 100 years to move from a kind of an aging to an aged population. But when you look at newcomers, kind of China, Brazil, and India, the slope, the steepness of the slope is very, very, kind of steep, the angle. Is very large, which means that they have a very small window of time to move from an aging society to an aged society. And if I put on some countries in the Middle East, you'll see even the direction is very even steeper, like Lebanon moving from aging to aged between 2014, 2030, Morocco, very similar. And Algeria. So there is not much space for policy and the society to kind of think about these things and take quick actions. And what we need to know that by 2050, 80% of the world's older people, which is 60 plus, will be living in low and middle income countries. So there is a need to think about the kind of how the society is prepared. But what I also want to emphasize is that it's much more than number. So it's not like you reach that age or this society is aging. It's also about the meaning of aging. And there is no typical definition. And it kind of varies across people and across society. And there are desired and unwanted outcomes. So first, it's something to be celebrated that we have longer life expectancy, that we're living for longer, that we have more years to give and to interact. But also, we know that not every year's gains are spent in good health. And there are huge level of inequalities, and there is burden of disease. And the notion itself of growing older from a kind of a sociological anthropological kind of perspective has both the connotations of good and bad. So you're very experienced and mature, but you also has a notion of frailty and dependency. And I think this is very important to keep in mind when we talk about old age. In addition to all these kind of changes and demographically speaking, the global connectedness is huge. So although that now we're not traveling, but the globe has become the kind of local villages. And it's not only about mobility of people, but ideas and the kind of virtual and actual connectedness. And that has led this mobility, historical mobility, has led to the notion of aging in place. And what does place mean? So you have lots of kind of previous migration trends for people moving from one country to the other, mainly through economic advances. They want to better off themselves, but sometimes kind of forced migration, like refugees, etc. But then it happens that you kind of have unplanned place to retire or to be old, and some ideas that could be different from where you are or where you end up being. So this idea of in and out of place, and this is a reflection from some research I have done with older migrant communities in the UK, is this idea of neither here nor there, but rather somewhere in between. And people that I have interviewed, when they think about aging, they feel I've got the ideas of aging, say, back from Turkey or from where I migrated from. And it's different from where aging looks like in Turkey, but it's also different from what aging looks like or expectation of aging. What do you expect to do while you're older from the UK? So it's a really kind of in between. And the journey again kind of shaped these in relation to the connectivities between groups. They are quite strong connectivities, but sometimes to limited social groups. So there are strong bonds, but limited groups. And that shapes kind of the experience and identity, as well as the notions of others. So what, how we view us, and this us is so different, and how we view them, and how we think they view us. And it's quite complicated in terms of shaping the quality of life, because I'm really interested in quality of life and well-being at old age. These are very important factors in shaping these kind of notions. So this is again from the same study that I used Nancy Fraser's framework, which is kind of recognition, representation, and kind of participation. And it's really, representation is really important in general, how you represent groups in the mass media and in the public. But they have all these kind of, you know, has impact on old age inequalities. And that is through the life course and social capital with positive and negative connotation. So I want to now kind of think about cross-learning in terms of the kind of old kind of countries which have the experience and newcomers. And there is really a need for paradigm shift in all countries when we think about aging, from a notion of crisis to really realizing opportunities. And to think about the life course as different and not static, it's more dynamic. And to be open about the flow of knowledge. So it's not about certain groups telling others how they should live their life or how they should meet certain needs, but it's a space for people to interact and to learn from each other, and that will shape the perceptions of self and others. And through this process, sustainability and equality became very important notions. And as I said, this idea of rethinking the life course, we still, particularly around learning, training and employment and retirement age, and, you know, you do a job, you do a degree, you keep working in it, but it's more dynamic. It has to become more dynamic. And really to come to grips that we are becoming younger, we're living longer, we're becoming younger. And think about the inclusivity of the built and socially constructed environment. And that becomes really important in low and middle income as well, countries in particular. So just a quick focus on the Middle East and North Africa. It's geographically wide. It spans kind of mix of culture, but socioeconomic and political dimensions as well. But historically characterized by younger populations, and thus the policies have been so much focused on younger people, education, employment, health. But there are similarities within the region as well as variabilities. But in generally speaking, when it comes to aging, for them it's a new phenomena, but at the same time they have these ideas of respecting older people, treasuring older people, and at the same time they have this very rapid process of aging, as I explained a little bit earlier, but these are nested within other demographics dynamic, so they still experiences population growth and thus have the population dividends, which means that there is still a huge number of labor market age groups that they can actually capitalize in. But there is also a kind of a culturally structured ideas around age groups and the roles, age-related roles and duties. And these are very important. So that in the whole region, there is this idea of treasuring older people. However, this notion needs a little bit of reconstructing in terms of what is real, in terms of giving people opportunities for healthy and meaningful aging process, and what is so rhetoric. Yes, we love older people, we care for them, but there is no opportunities. And also to really realize this, the importance of family and community and care as a family business. So whenever we think about a care model or a system model, we think about, you know, family as a core element of that, yet there is, the family might not be there all the time. So we know that there are realities around living arrangement, migration, might not actually, you know, ensure, you know, it's varying the realities of the family, where they are and their availability. And thus, we have to think about support mechanisms that is still kind, and care option that is still kind, resonates to some extent to this familial context. But within this also, especially when we think about expectation from old age, physical activity is a big thing, and particularly physical inactivity. It's like when you care for people at old age, you kind of make them comfortable by not making them do anything. And also around isolation and loneliness, and there is a lot here, particularly around gender. And I think I'm going to mention gender quickly later on. So that's the gender issue. So in the region, the families and communities are very important, and they are actually guided by certain gender rules and expectations, as well as aspirations. So when you talk about older people in the region, you expect that women in the family will care, will carry on the care burden. They would love to do that. Men, they carry more of the financial burden and ensuring that the care is in place. But then increasingly, women become the sandwich generation who has to care for older parents or parents-in-law and care for their own children and their own family and their work as well. And thus, there are unequal but qualitatively different gender share of caring burden. And I want to speak quickly about family and marriage norms, because they impact older women with traditionally, you know, large interspousal age gap, and also levels of remarriage after widowhood or divorce. You end up with a lot of older women living alone, without a husband, in their own, for a long period of time. And there are differentials in the level of people living alone when we come, is it a man or a woman? And also these ideas of flows of duties and rules across generations, and how there are expectations from older generation to support younger generations with grandparenting, with accommodation and financially. So there are lots of questions around women's issues and well-being and quality of life. So I want really to introduce a new initiative, which is called the Middle East and North Africa Research on Aging Healthy in the Middle East, that we have established recently. So we had a launch September last year, and I would like you to have a look at the website. It's www, I'll put it in the next slide, minara.org. But basically, we wanted to mobilize knowledge exchange and research activities, and really to raise awareness, because policy is very occupied in the region with other issues. Despite, and albeit recently, there has been some attention to the issues of aging, but again, it's coming from a crisis perspective, which we need to shift a little bit to an opportunity perspective. And as a way of introductions, I'm going to play a very short video. It's a segment of an introductory video that you can watch in full on the website. I hope the streaming will go well. Population aging is happening across the world, but in the Middle East and North Africa, it's happening at a much faster rate. While it has taken Europe more than a century to shift these demographics, countries in the MENA region, as it's called, will experience the same change in a fraction of that time. Countries like Turkey and Egypt have yet to develop their infrastructure or conduct necessary research to support the surge in older people.
We know from the age structure, you know from the data, that in the near future, the percentage will increase. But that's not the issue. The issue is, if you want to worry about the old age, you have to start from now. if we wait till the percentage become a real challenge, then we don't have anything in place to be able to deal with that percentage. So we're quite convinced that the time is opportune to start now.
تخلي الناس المسلمين دول عندهم خبرات كتير جدا يستفيدوا بيها عندهم لقاء يعني في حياتهم في حاجات لو هم ألقوها للصغيرين هتكون سبب انه تساعدهم على تخطي المصاعب اللي في الحياة.
هو المفروض يتعمل حساب الناس الكبار في السن من ناحية ايه الأرصفة يعني يعملوا الرصيد عالي طوله مثلا متر الا ربع طب الكبير في السن ده يطلع ازاي؟ المفروض يبقى حاجه قريبه من الانسان. يبقى في نادي قريب من المنطقه الواحد ما يركبلوش مواصلات يتمشى. يبقى في جناين.
It's very important to talk about the caregiver. We don't have any research about that. Only very sporadic that happens in few studies, one of them that we had in Ismailia, it was about 17 years ago. The data was extensive, but it was on a very small community in rural Ismailia and urban Ismailia. It's not sufficient. We're looking for a huge effort in which we register the regional differences, the cultural differences within the Egyptian society. We need to study that.
في مجتمعنا الشرقي موضوع ان حد يراعي مامته ده طبعا شيء معتاد يعني في اغلب البيوت وفي ديننا برضو بيحسنا على ذلك بس بنيجي برضو فتره ان احنا بنبقى محتاجين خصوصيه او راحه او بريك او كده فمين طيب يراعيها مثلا في الفتره مثلا لو انا هاخد مع اسرتي اجازه او كده
انا مهندسه انا واخواتي
او سوري او ماي جودنس I was hearing that it wasn't, so I'll try to get to the point.
Urban Somali. It's not, this is the culture.
في مجتمعنا الشرقي موضوع ان حد يراعي مامته ده طبعا شيء معتاد يعني في اغلب البيوت وفي ديننا برضو بيحسنا على ذلك بس بنيجي برضو فترة ان احنا بنبقى محتاجين خصوصية او راحة او بريك او كده فمين طيب يراعيها مثلا في الفتره مثلا لو انا هاخد مع اسرتي اجازه او كده
انا مهندسه انا واخواتي احنا ثلاث بنات متزوجات اثنين منا متزوجات واحده عايشه بره مصر احنا الثلاثه تقريبا حياتنا اتغيرت في محاوله رعايتهم يعني انا اضطريت في وقت ما ان انا عشان ما اكونش لان كان شغلي بعيد عن والدي ووالدتي ان انا اسيب الشغل اللي هو الفول تايم وابقى بشتغل فريلانسر او من البيت او كده عشان اكون قريبه منهم عشان مثلا اوفر لهم مكان بيكون فيه اسانسير ومسهل الحركه ليهم اضطر ان انقل لمكان بعيد وده عبء مادي اغير حياتنا كلها
لان مصر هي اللي فيها ناس بيحبوا بعض وبيتعاطفوا مع بعض يعني مش ممكن تلاقي جيران ساكنين جنب بعض وما يتواصلوش مع بعض ويعرفوا ده تعبان يروحوا ده عاوز حاجة يجيبوها له وصغيرين دايما يحبوا يقدموا الكبار فبالتالي الحياة مريحة والحياة حلوة
It's not just in Egypt by the way we're talking generally in the Arab region so it's a combination of factors you need lots of knowledge to inform the policy that knowledge needs to be reflective of the context we're living in we also need to make sure that you put on the agenda of the policymaker, the importance of dealing with these issues and preparing for it from now.
I hope that you've got some of this video. I know that the technology doesn't work perfectly, and I just read in the chat that the picture is not very well, but it's basically just a taster. We have, you can watch the whole video there, you can watch the launch event, and you can read about the work of this network. And really, it's to draw the attention to this uncovered and untapped area of research, not only in the Middle East, but in a lot of low and middle income countries. But what I want to say, and maybe finalize, and I didn't manage to speak about COVID, but we can take this in the discussions and the questions and answers. that aging is everyone's business and it's happening across the world. So it's not like happening in one country or not in one society or not. It is a normal part of our life journeys. Yet it is perceived differently by different peoples and by different groups. And there are huge differences in experience, but there are also commonalities that we can think about it and try to learn from each other and capitalize on and benefit from the longevity that we're experiencing. One of the main things is to rethink these rigid ideas of life course, but also about expectations in terms of what you expect when you reach a certain age and what can you do or you can't do. But also to realize that for some countries, because of this huge pace and speed of changes in the population structure, that there needs to be actions to be taken right now and to have opportunity to cross learning between the global north and the global south, particularly around building capacity, knowledge transfer, and sharing of ideas, perhaps on equal footages. For example, the community, the importance of notions of communities and the individual is really important. And in Europe, we're realizing this and we're trying to build in them some of the models. So I'm conscious to the time because I want to leave 15 minutes for the conversation. And that's it for me. So thank you very much for listening and bearing with the technology. And I'm open to take any questions. I hand back to Yeni.
Thanks so much, Shireen, for the excellent presentation, really. That was so inspiring. And also about the video, I was the one who wrote that at times the